3, 2, 1. I'm Victoria Scott. My pronouns are she and her. I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, my name is Jordan Hofstetter. My pronouns are she and her. And we've got a guest, our second Kevin.
Hi, yeah, I'm Kevin Williams. Pronouns he, him.
Kevin, we will only let men come on the show if they are named Kevin.
Apparently, it's you and Bacali are the only dudes who have been on. So,
Kevin is an auto journalist who currently works at Inside EVs, but he's been working in the industry for a very long time. We worked together at like two or three different outlets, I think, depending on how you want to count them. Because we both worked at Car Bibles, if you remember that one, which was the Drive spinoff site about like how to wrench on your own car.
Right, that's what that thing was. I was trying to like, I have been to that URL, but what?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I did for them, which of course, like again, as with any like auto journalist career. Both Kevin and my work from there is completely wiped from the internet because, you know.
Yeah, that sucks. I did some of my best, like, early work there.
Yeah.
Which I'm, like, kind of pissed about. Some of the bigger stories ended up being, like, reposted by The Drive. So, but, like, I don't know. Like, I think I did a Mary Kay expose that never...
Oh, my God, yeah. Right!
Yeah.
I remember that. God, we used to have so many more websites, and that was back even in the era of like, wow, we used to have way more websites than remember magazines? We used to have magazines we could all work at.
Right. Now everything's kind of like the same, like, you know, Larry Ellison-esque conglomerate. You know,
how many books can Hearst buy before they are satiated?
Right. It's like we're like everybody. It's like every auto magazine is Stellantis now. You know, just like a whole bunch of brands. I don't know what we're doing here. You know, it really sucks.
but you did cool work that then. Then we worked at The Drive together after Car Bibles went under. We both did the Pride features together. That's the main thing I remember about working together on when I was at The Drive for like a year-ish.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about those. That was fun.
That was very stressful, but people seemed to like them, so that worked out well. But I remember working with you on those. I remember you obviously reporting on your Mitsubishi iMiEV.
Rest in peace.
Is he gone?
Yeah, it died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the battery. I've been trying to, like, do a story on it, but it's kind of been kind of low on my priority right now. But, yeah, basically, just the battery died. It wouldn't charge again. So.
No. I love that thing.
Is there a pipeline for, like, replacement batteries for those? Or are you just dealing with,
car is Coke cans now.
Oh.
I tried, but I'm like, there's no, like, replacement battery scheme for that thing. It's basically, like... I tell people it's like driving a rolling iPhone 4.
Like in aesthetic styling as well.
Yeah, literally. I couldn't do anything with it.
I think the iMiEV is really charming, and I really like it. However, this is more of just like one of the amount of effort people used to put into the Houston Auto Show, and also the health of Mitsubishi in America. The iMiEV that they had at the Houston Auto Show the last time I went as press literally was not, like, the paint was different colors for panel. Like, they didn't do the paint matching. The pink was slightly off from panel to panel, and I was just like, I brought like three other people. I'm like, I'm not having some sort of like, I'm not like losing my eyes. Like, I don't need to like go to the doctor, right? Like, this car's not the same color.
I saw when I was in Europe briefly. I saw in Paris somebody had a Peugeot rebadged iMiEV, which I didn't know was ever a thing.
Yep.
Anyway, I'm sad because I really love that car. That was like a really adorable sort of like in the same way that like when I was at the drive, my thing was like the van. You had like the IMEV. It was like an automotive calling card.
It was. It's a bummer. It really was. It made me realize that, like, I don't know, sometimes automotive journalists are full of shit. Because if you read articles about the IMEV when it came out, like, sure, it was not a great car, but they made it sound damn near undrivable. And, like, I love that thing. I put, like, almost 10,000 miles on it before it died.
That's insane, considering it had, like, what, 45 miles of range?
When it was new, it was 62, but by the end there, I was getting, like, maybe 20.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah,
it was pretty bad. But, like, 20 miles is way further than people think, you know?
Yes, yeah, yes. Absolutely. That's the thing where I always feel like people have no idea how long a mile is, and that is where a lot of range anxiety comes in, which we could get into that, like, the US EV market later, but I think of the IMEV the same way I think of, like, the first gen Leaf, where it's like, mm-hmm. do I want to own one right now? No, probably not, but I think they're so charming.
Oh,
It's like that in the BMW i3. I'm like, remember when electric cars were supposed to be like, and they, a lot of them still are, but like, it was just this like, it was the last bits of what if the kids started calling it millennial optimism. Like, honest, I'm like, wow, everything's getting better forever.
right. It's like a quirky little science experiment instead of like, I don't know, a weird, sad culture war thing, you know?
Yeah. No, that's very good way to put it. I was just saying, I was
picture themselves in a Leaf, and therefore,
right, like everything's like weird and hyper masculine, but also like kind of shitty too. You know,
it's I was just reading about the Slate truck earlier today.
Oh boy, they're gonna fail.
I didn't even put that one.
They're gonna sell five of those things.
Yeah,
no, I'm fully with you. When I was living in Reno, Nevada, at Bradley Brownell's house, ex-Jalopnik Drill, I think you may have worked with him, too. I lived in his house.
Jalopnik also, he keeps getting pulled back in. He's worked there five separate times, I think.
Right. It works for him, so I'm like, you know, power to you, man.
It's him and Patrick George. They keep getting roped back in there. I think Patrick George might finally be free of never having to go back to Jalopnik again.
Yeah, he's at Wall Street Journal now, so good for him.
Yeah, he's fine. Except for, you know, let me take a big sip of coffee and read about the Wall Street Journal right now.
But I'm like, man, you asshole. You fucking left me here at Inside EVs by myself. But whatever. It's all good.
I was his last failed protege for a while. I love that man.
But I drove Brad's. Brad left me his Leaf, which had, I think, 42 miles of range left on it, which dropped immediately if you ever touched, even looked at the climate control buttons.
Yeah.
But, like, in Reno, that was enough to, like, go see the other trans people that lived in town, all three of them. So it was cool. Like, I was like, this is actually really doable because I had a garage that, like, a 110 outlet,
mm-hmm.
but I could charge overnight. And I've thought a lot in my life that, like, if I ever lived somewhere again where I had, like, just an outlet, I would, like, get, like, a $4,000 used Leaf. It's just mm-hmm. the lack of access to an outlet has been a consistent theme for me in Seattle, because landlords would rather kill themselves than give you any kind of charging options whatsoever.
Yep.
I would have a used BMW i3 right this second if I could put a charger in on the front of my house.
No, we gotta get you in the Fisker still.
Oh God.
Victoria, do you know what I did for 5 minutes at work today?
No.
Auto Trader Fiskers.
You can get them for like numbers. You can get them for like $2.
So they $2 a firm handshake, and they'll buy you lunch. Like,
it's actually one of my queer friends. They have like they had two i3s and a Fisker.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh my God!
They should just come on the show just for that alone.
Yeah, but like
committed. Great.
She loved them though. She's like, I love my i3s, and both got totaled because like they're kind of like i3s kind of total easily. Because, like, the, the subframes and the understructure is carbon fiber.
Yep.
So, if, like, if you get, like, even in a minor fender bender, like, they crack. Like, they're not really repairable.
They're tubbed, yeah.
Yeah,
they're,
so, like.
They're, like, yeah.
So, when it cracks, it's like, well, car's over. And then, like, of course, with a Fisker, like, you know, if you do anything to that car, it's just, it's like insta total. So now she has a Polestar and she's loving it. So
okay, that's the natural like progression for a in like an old i3 person, because the new i3 sparks no joy.
Really? Yeah.
BMW can't make me happy design language wise. I unfortunately am my dad had he bought the world's like literally the cheapest E46 M3 at one point, just as he needed some. But because that wasn't his main car, I ended up using it a ton when my Miata died. Mm. He's like, it's slightly more practical for you, but you shop around for something else. So I drove that for a while. So I have, that is peak BMW in my mind, is like, yeah. E46 to the i3. The i3 was the last thing that I saw from them that I went, I want it. I like, it's a little guy.
Yeah. I
drove the i7. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I drove the i7 for the drive, actually. And I thought it made me feel like Cruella de Vil. So I kind of liked that a bit. I don't know if it's like what I would call a good car, but it made me feel evil. So I kind of enjoyed that.
Yeah,
i7 just the 7 series.
It's the 7 series with batteries under the floor. And it's actually like, hats off to BMW, because between the two cars, there's like no ergonomic differences. Yeah. Or if it is, it's like you really can't notice them. I didn't mind the i7. I did it for road and track, and I was like, okay, whatever. And then they gave me one on accident, because like there was a scheduling mix up for the press cars, so they just dropped one off at my house. Okay. And it was like, I understood it more when I was driving it every day. Like, yeah. It really is, it just feels like kind of an overstuffed car, even for like, you know, a big luxury sedan. And it also didn't feel like it also didn't feel like a BMW to me. Like, I told somebody, I was like, you know, this feels like a Cadillac DeVille in a weird way.
Yeah.
You know, not in a bad way. Like, if it had a Cadillac badge on it, I would love it. But as a BMW, I'm like, what is this?
No, that's a really good way to put it, honestly.
Speaking of Cadillac, how do you feel about their, our favorite Cadillac, the electric nightmare that they will sell 4 of ever, and the all Celestique. To GM, the Celestique, all to GM executives.
Oh yeah, I think surprisingly, it seems like Cadillac's whole like EV line is somehow doing okay, but I don't like any of them, and I probably shouldn't say that, but I was like okay yeah, you can keep this. Although I did think it was really funny, because I was in China for I think the Beijing Auto Show, no, it was the Shanghai Auto Show last year, and their tagline in China is like, love is what makes a Cadillac.
No, that's okay. Not theirs.
Yeah,
that's,
I'm like, theirs. okay. Or then like, there was another one. It was like, I can't remember if it was Lincoln or it was Cadillac. It's like, let us be your option B. Which is, I was like, is that a translation error? Because I'm like,
that's breathtakingly honest.
Right. But also, like, it's like, damn, like, let us be second place. Like, come on, man. I had to ask somebody, is that a translation error? I'm like, am I stupid? And they're like, no, that's what they said.
Yeah, you're like, is there like a cultural connotation?
Legitimately, I was like, am I stupid? No, that's what they said.
Oh yeah, so I was that's right. I got distracted. I sniped my nerd sniped myself with your IMEV, and the sadness I had about its untimely demise. But Kevin also freelanced basically everywhere in the entire automotive industry, and has worked at Motor One and Inside EVs for what, 2-3 years now?
Yeah, I think we're kind of on year 3, but yeah, something like that.
And it's just like genuinely an expert in EVs, still actually working, unlike Jordan and I. So we wanted to have him on to talk about all of this stuff, because he is one of the most knowledgeable people about EVs I've ever met. He does a lot of really, really great stories. But specifically, speaking of like the Chinese market and American car companies in general, you did a story that was, well, I thought it was pretty recently. It turned out it was like 4 years ago, because time isn't real. But you did a story. Huh?
Are you okay?
No, I thought it like last year.
Well, it was 2 years ago. It's 2 years ago because that was a because it was specifically the first time China opened back up to foreigners. That was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Because they had everything shut down for COVID, and now they were like, okay, well now we can have people over again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was 2 years ago. I'm not completely losing my mind.
No.
It was titled, I went to China and drove a dozen electric cars. Western automakers are cooked. Which was just brilliant titling. The article does follow through on that, and it is a very compelling viewpoint. But it was just refreshing to see somebody write with, like, clarity, bluntness about kind of, like, the fact that the Chinese market has good cars in it now, which I don't think any other like Western auto journalist really wants to either recognize or admit, aside from like maybe like Jim Farley the one time when he was like, yeah, actually they're kind of good over there nowadays.
Right.
And like in the meantime, like obviously this is 2024, you know, this has proven itself incredibly prescient, I think, especially as we've seen the rest of the world be like, you know, kind of turn away from America as it reorients towards a more stable trading partner who is a little bit more predictable in China, and been like, oh, damn, your cars are great. Like, Canada is now probably gonna be full of like Chinese EVs.
Yeah.
And I wanted, like, you know, in the 2 years since you wrote that piece, is there a lot that's changed? Like, where do you think we're at as far as like Chinese EVs on like the global market nowadays?
I think just as a whole, China's kind of become this unignorable force in, like, you know, global automotive, like, you know, car world. Even when I went 2 years ago, and that was kind of like the first time, as I said earlier, when China opened up, and it was like, well, now people are finally seeing, people in the West are seeing exactly, like, just where China is and how far ahead they are with their electric vehicles. Now we're kind of seeing, to put it, now it's like, before it's like, well, they cheated or they're doing all this stuff and we can't keep up with them, to so how do we manage them? Like, do we partner with them? Do we kind of give up and let them win? It's kind of a weird dynamic that everyone kind of has with China now.
Do you, like, I had seen recently, and I didn't put this in the notes, and I should have, like, for example, in Canada, I think it was Stellantis was like, oh, yeah, we're going to partner with some Chinese automaker to build Chinese EVs basically in Canada. Like, do you think a lot of, like, formerly U.S.-oriented countries are going to head towards that model of things?
I think yes. I think, you know, between, like, you know, what's going on with Iran and how, like, you know, gas prices are fucked now, I think just, like, China kind of has the goods and everyone needs the goods. Aside from the United States, people are still starting to electrify pretty, like, you know, consistently in a lot of other countries. And at the end of the day, a lot of the Western automakers kind of don't have any product. Like, okay, you can talk so much shit about China, about what they are doing or how they cheated or whatever, but what do you sell? You know, Ford doesn't have anything. I mean, for better or worse, you know, Ford CEO talks about how China's doing this. Now they have all this stuff coming. But if you look at their EV plans, they're just kind of like, whatever. I mean, the Ford Mach-E is kind of a global flop. They killed the Lightning. They're going to make it a gas-powered EREV truck instead, which I think is going to be a waste of time. GM's EVs are kind of like, they're kind of not really that great. Like, they're hit or miss. Like, the Equinox EV is okay. But, I mean, even if you go to China, a lot of the Ultium cars are, like, flops or have been canceled already because they're not that great by comparison, you know?
Well, and Stellantis assuredly is coming in at the last moment here.
I mean, like, the Stellantis stuff isn't that great. I mean, it doesn't seem like the U.S. side is doing too much. And then the French side, they're just kind of like, you know, putting batteries underneath gas cars, and they're kind of working in Europe, but not really.
The idea that they didn't even actually remove the ICE, they just kind of taped batteries under it. They're like,
side note, I do love it when, like, automakers do, like, half-ass conversions of gas cars. I tell people it looks like a fucking Skechers Shape Up. Remember those shoes? Like, remember those shoes? That's what it looks like.
Yes, absolutely.
like, or like a pair of like platform sandals. I'm like, okay, I can like see you.
That's
like
what
you,
that's what the Cayenne looks like. The electric new Cayenne. I'm like, this is giving like Crocs designed this. This is a collabo with Crocs.
Like they're really trying to hide that big ass battery and they can't. But yeah, you know, it's China's a very much an unignorable force. You know, especially in the global south, and like you know, in a lot of Asian markets, like, you know, Malaysia, Philippines, even Australia is really becoming a really big like market for them too. Basically, they're entering these markets with like, you know, really value oriented vehicles, and people are realizing actually this is pretty nice.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people are in trouble because, you know, if these cars manage to stay together, I think there's going to be a really, really big shift that I don't think a lot of automakers can come back from.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, so we have had, you know, 9 episodes before this. And of course, we had the perfect timing of being like, well, we're both kind of like disillusioned millennials who don't really like the U.S. auto industry. And we don't have anybody to report to, so we can say whatever we want. And then everybody brought in their earnings reports from last year.
Ooh, it's been
canceling. Yeah, they started canceling all of their EV projects. And it's like we've gone from, you know, kind of the top line, like, oh, Stellantis is going to, you know, resurrect themselves by bringing back the Hemi again, which is like, okay, haha, yeah. Right. This is what happens every 5 years. But like the funny, like the less funny one or more funny one, depending on how you want to think about it, is like Honda, like with the Afila and the Series Zero cancellations, like they're not even an American car company. They also seem screwed now, just because like the fallout of our market collapsing has kind of thrown them off guard.
Yeah, it's I keep thinking about how a lot of these, like, as more of these first EV initiatives, second wave EV initiatives, all either fail or get canceled. It's not like anyone is pivoting to like, okay, but how do we do this good? Like, no one in Stellantis is like, am I going crazy? Or did a couple of years ago they announced they were adding EV to the, like, trying to shoehorn the letters E and V into Alfa Romeo? Because Alfa was going to go all electric. Was that a Volkswagen thing where I got fucking punked by something?
I don't think you got punked, but they definitely said they were going to be an EV only brand soon, I think.
Yeah, and just now it's just like, you want another Quadrifoglio? You want whatever a Tonale is? Like, there's not an electric one. There's not even a hybrid one. Like,
yeah, they cut the hybrid for Tonale, which is crazy.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they cut it.
Yeah, no.
At least for the U.S. market.
They can't even do hybrids anymore.
Yeah, they cut the PHEV.
To be
fair, the PHEV was a mess. I had the Dodge version. Well, I had the Dodge version. It was a mess. I hated it.
To be fair, again, we talked about how no one at Dodge should have signed off on badge engineering an Alfa Romeo product.
Like to see the least happy consumers of all time, just go to the Reddit forums for the Hornet owners. Like, it's dire.
It's really bad. I keep peeking over the fence and like seeing like all of these new Chinese EVs come to other markets, and like I think they're gonna smash Europe. Like, the idea of being able to like cross shop the Taycan with like the SU7 and just going, oh, the best version of the Taycan is like, and I'm gonna just keep going back and forth on pronunciations, because even I've heard like Porsche press people go back and forth on if it's Taycan or Taycan, and I'm just like, we gotta pick. You gotta pick. Say it out loud in a commercial, please. But like cross shopping that, where it's like, oh, the best Taycan is $240,000 fully loaded, and an SU7 it tops out somewhere at like 90, I think, for a like the comparable model. And I just go like,
and you've driven an SU7, right?
No, I've driven the YU7.
Oh, okay.
So the crossover one, the fake Ferrari one, which like,
I like. That looks better than the actual Puro Subway.
I think it's great. I drove it, and I have there's a video review in it for Inside EVs that I did. And I'm like, you know, it's very hard to remember that this is this company's second car ever. Like,
it,
Oh god, we're so fucked.
Like literally, like it was like it was like there was like nothing I could say about it dynamically that was wrong. You know? And I'm like, wow.
Are they even lagging behind in like, because a lot of these companies were like making phones or other consumer electronics before the big pivot to EVs. Like, mm-hmm. So I actually think that, like, you know, Volkswagen, who's been making cars for 100 years without any baggage behind when they started, like the ID4 on the inside was like, I'm like, why did you try to reinvent buttons from first principles? Like, we have user experience in a car figured out.
Yeah.
And everything I've seen from, like, the SU7, the YU7, I'm just like, oh, they just also get it. Like, if you told me that they'd been making cars in China for, like, 60 years already, and this is just their first EV models, I'd be like, oh, they did really well. But, like, they were not building cars 10 years ago, and now it's just like, do you want...
Yeah.
Do you want the
my hunch is that everyone's young. You know, when I was on the Xiaomi YU7 launch, what struck out to me is that the guy who was running the whole program was like 30.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like at least running like the PR side of it. And it's just like there's a lot of like, you know, young engineers and young people who have like new ideas, and I think that's kind of the space where they're being like being able to put that on display, and that's like kind of the case for everything. Like I think XPeng was the same way, Geely and Zeekr, they were really similar. I think somebody told me that, I can't remember, it was like the average age of somebody who works at like Zeekr was like 34.
Oh wow,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, then you go to like, you know, a traditional, you know, Western automaker, and everyone's like, you know, crotchety and old.
Yeah, everyone leading any sort of like development program at one of the major automakers is mm-hmm. like someone who's been at that automaker for like 30 years at this
point. Yeah, I remember.
Or,
I mean,
or like got scooped from another automaker. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, it was crazy. I did like a thing for Lucid Drive a while ago, and they had, there was a woman who was heading, I think it was this. Mm-hmm. software team for their like driving experience. It was like basically the handling side of stuff, and she was like, I don't know how close to my age she was, but she was definitely like under the age of 50, and it was like crazy for like both a woman and somebody who was like even within my same generation to be at an American car company. And that was I ascribed that primarily to like you know, Silicon Valley kind of like fresh. Mm-hmm. You know, Lucid is kind of like the young up and coming.
Yeah,
you know?
like when I use infotainment in so many Western cars, especially like BMW, to me is like one of the worst offenders. It's like I just want to ask the designers: has anybody on staff ever used a phone before?
Truly, it feels
like everything has too many menus. There's no sense of hierarchy, and I'm like, have any of you ever, like, you know, God forbid, texted and driven before? Have you ever worked at McDonald's, you know, where you have to use like a touchscreen in a drive-through? And it just fucking pisses me off, you know. Versus like when I go to these Chinese brands, you know, they're used to working with phones. Everybody's like, you know, kind of a digital native, just because of like how technology kind of came to China kind of all at once. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's clear that the people who are designing this stuff in China, like, you know, they're used to it. But also, like, I think there's also, like, you know, something to be said about the car manufacturers that kind of, like, you know, try to play to their strengths here. For example, Geely's a really famous example. They could not do infotainment very well. So instead of being like, you know, instead of trying to have like spending all this time of engineers, like car engineers, trying to make it work, they just went ahead and bought a phone company.
Yeah,
that honestly makes so much more sense.
And it's like, you know, you guys do it, and it's great. Same with like, you know, Xiaomi for some, I mean, they started out making phones, and it's like, you know, why don't we go backwards to cars? XPeng is very similar. Like, you know, they were more so a tech company that decided to like experiment with cars a little bit. So like, you know, when you have those kind of backgrounds, it's like definitely like, I think, an asset. And I think why, you know, Chinese cars and why Chinese infotainment really looks the way it does. And it also, it just seems like maybe you guys kind of got that from the stuff I wrote back in 2024. It just really feels that there's a level of cooperation between Chinese tech companies and Chinese car companies that we do not see here in the West. Whether that's at the behest of the state, I'm not sure. But also, like, that's neither here nor there. We're here. Like, for example, having like the robust, you know, third party apps. You know, there are so many music apps and other things that, you know, are replicated from the phone to the car. You know, there's the same sort of experience between those two programs that we just don't have in Western cars. You know,
and I just think about how, like, we talked about Apple here in the States making an electric car for so many years, and how it seemed like a thing that no one there could, like, fully ever get, even past, like, a very early pre-production stage. And then these tech companies are just pivoting to cars in the span of 5 years and, like, seemingly just nailing it. Like, yeah. I don't know if I've heard of a bad, like, I feel like pre 2020, once again, Top Gear being a specter of conservatism. Like,
and our childhoods.
Yeah, yeah, I think Top Gear talking about, like, how every Chinese car was, like, a just one-for-one ripoff of, like, a Mini Cooper or whatever. Like, I feel like people still think of the car industry over there as, like, this lack of innovation. And I also feel like people just think that they're lying.
Yeah.
That, like, these cars are real and do these things, when it's just like, no, yeah, they sold like 100,000 of them last year. Like, I don't, like, people are driving them. Like, I don't know what you want me to do.
Like, yeah, like, these things are winning awards. I mean, I think it was Neo's Firefly. I think it was the safest car ever tested by Euro NCAP.
Yeah. Anyway, right. Yeah.
I've driven that car. It's great. I think part of that is, like, you know, there's definitely a healthy dose of Sinophobia there. You know, of course, like, of course China cheated, right? That's all they do is make us cheap shit. But I do think, you know, I mean, back in the day, a lot of this stuff was cloned, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's undeniable.
That's, like, how every auto industry starts, though. Like, that's like, whether it's, like, formally or informally, basically every, like, with the exception of, like, you know, the U.S. and Europe at the birth of the auto industry, who kind of, like, independently came up with, like, some car designs. And even then, like, there was a lot of back and forth trading ideas. Most other auto industries kind of began from, like, we're going to build either, like, a by-license model, or we're going to, like, pretty strongly copy some stuff. Like, you look at, like, early Soviet cars, and, like, a lot of those are just kind of like, hey, we put a coat of paint on, like, a 1940s GM that we just happened to find sitting in a field somewhere.
Yeah, we found these. They abandoned this factory when the war started. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But also, like, you know, a lot of Western automakers came to China because they saw it as a place for cheap labor and a big market.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, well, I mean, what do you expect? Come on.
Are you telling me that, like, you can't just coast on the cultural prestige of Buicks for your entire existence?
Right. And that's what they did. And as you saw from what I saw or what I wrote in 2024, you know, it was very apparent that, you know, so many Western automakers were selling kind of half-assed versions of stuff they were selling all over the globe. But it was clear that they were not listening to what Chinese people actually wanted.
You know?
Like, what do they like? How do they use their vehicles? And I just think that a lot of, you know, homegrown Chinese brands were like, you know what? What are people looking for in a car that we can give them?
Yeah. And well, another thing too, I do not remember where I saw this. I remember a video you posted. I think we were still working together at the time, so this had to have been, you know, a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a car you had tested that had, like, a little emoticon emoji.
Oh yeah, that's Neo.
Eye inside. Okay, yeah, and it had, like, a little cowboy hat on it and stuff.
Yeah,
I remember thinking that was just, like, one of the most fun, whimsical kind of, like, build a rapport. Like, every time I go to any kind of, like, press event, which, you know, I don't anymore, but when I used to go to any kind of press event for, like, EV, especially in the US, every PR person was like, we have to figure out how to, like, make an emotional pitch to buyers, because EVs are largely regarded as, like, interchangeable, because they don't have, like, the same characteristics as a gas car. So we have to, like, lean on heritage or personality or design or, you know, comfort or whatever. and, you know, to try to get people to like emotionally connect with our product line. And then I saw, like, you know, oh, hey, you could just put a guy in the car that, like, smiles and, you know, has emotions and waves at you.
It could,
like,
just be fun and normal.
Yeah, and it is. Like, they, even if you go to, like, a Neo showroom, they have, like, a line of, like, toys and gadgets that are based off that thing. It's called Nomi.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's like a cute little mascot for the whole brand.
Yeah.
Like for, like, the cowboy hat was, like, the hats and stuff were definitely, like, unsanctioned because, like, they kind of could go flying if you hit something. But there's like a whole little like cottage like industry of like basically a Chinese version of Etsy where people like make and give you instructions on how to make like little fun little hats or accessories for the thing. Oh, and I'm God. Like, right. I'm like, that's such a cute little like thing, you know? Oh, nobody. And yeah. I just think about that. And I think about that kind of user experience that go beyond the car here.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel like Western automakers want to do that.
No.
They don't want to do anything. I think I remember seeing some, I think just in general, like an industry, I saw somebody, I forget what TikTok or whatever it is I saw. It's like, you know, these corporations act like they have, act upset that they have to go through you to get your money.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I just feel like there's so many like EVs and, or just cars in general, or just like in corporations in general that are made with contempt, you know?
Yes.
It's like they didn't want to make it. Like, I don't like this. I don't like doing this. I don't like doing this job. Fuck you. Give me my money and get out of my face. You know?
Yeah, I've also driven a Blazer EV.
Kevin, what's the dealer? Is everything direct to consumer?
No.
Automaker wise?
It is not.
There are dealerships.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of the a lot of the techie startup ones are like, you know, direct to consumer. Like I think Neo is direct to consumer. XPeng is direct to consumer. But some of the more bigger traditional ones, I think like BYD, Ford, Chevy, GM, a lot of those I think actually have franchise dealers or like release dealerships that are more kind of similar to what you get here.
Hmm. Okay, so it's I was wondering, I'm like, I don't know if all of these like new EVs are being sold, I hate to call it,
oh no,
Tesla style, but like I also think a lot of the American problems with EVs are not only the contempt from like the automakers not wanting to do this, but how much of it is based on dealer contempt?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
Everyone's favorite petite nightmare person in their local community, the local car dealers. Like, I think about, like, going... I was looking at a hybrid Maverick back when those first came out, because I was maybe thinking about buying one. And I just overheard a conversation between two salespeople about the upcoming F-150 Lightning at that point. And they were just like, I'm going to steer, like, two guys on the sales floor actively talking about steering people back towards the gas.
Like, why, though?
Because they want to sell maintenance. They want to sell oil changes.
I'm not even sure. I'm not even sure they think that deeply. They just don't like electric cars.
Also that, because they think it was gay. Like, yeah, well, like, I, like, whatever. The electric cars are just, the fact that EVs have become a culture war topic in America, I'm like, I don't know what we could have done to avoid it because of the environment that we live in, because I think if I knew how to avoid this culture war, we would have had a lot of other things that are more important solved. But like, it's so maddening because Vicky, you put it in the show notes, but I do, yeah, looking at all of these awesome, cheap, affordable, wonderful cars that everyone else is getting is just, it is the meme of Squidward watching SpongeBob and Patrick just frolic outside. Like, I'm like, God, just, do I want to just go to mainland and just rent a car for a week and just be like, ah, how the other half lives?
yeah, and it's so interesting because like when I first posted that thing back in 2024, people called me all sorts of names because like it kind of came out of containment for like, you know, the car world, and then all of a sudden it was like everybody was like picking up on it. Like I remember going to my LinkedIn and I had people from the U.S. State Department looking at my profile.
Oh, that's normal and cool.
Right. I'm like, damn, y'all think I'm like, people were so convinced I was being paid by the Chinese to say something nice. And I'm like, no, your cars are just ass. And I don't have to like this. And I don't think Americans have to give you money.
No, because, and here's the thing, right? Is I remember there was a car company that didn't maybe give people money, but did definitely work really, really hard to get nice things said about them. VinFast, if you remember them, they released that one SUV that was absolute ass. Yeah. And they got a lot of like favorable coverage. And I remember you saying at the time, how is this even a company? This is the worst joke of a vehicle I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was like...
And they tried, like they were basically ready to hand you just like a fat stack of hundreds. To
yeah. They're like, and if you check the glove box, there's some gas money.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that. That post, that's also like kind of a career-changing moment for me, because I remember I went to Vietnam, and it was like, hey, this car is a piece of shit. You cannot sell this in the United States. You're going to be embarrassed. And what happened? They were embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
called shots. Nothing but. And so that's the thing is, when you go to China and you're like, these are actually great, I know that you're not like.
Yeah, because I'm not going to lie. I definitely kind of came in with some reservations, because it's like a little scary. You know, it's a communist country. They're not necessarily, the government is not friendly to the United States. Yeah. And I'm not going to lie and say, that everything is like above board in China. But yeah. I will say that, you know, what they're turning out is really good. Like scary good. Like they're, it just kind of pissed me off. Cause like, you know, I come back to the United States and whenever we do any sort of like EV comparisons, or like people ask me like, what kind of EV should I buy? And I'm kind of like, nothing. Versus like if I lived in China, there would be so many choices from so many different price points that I could put people in. You know, if I lived in China, I would have a hard time picking out which car I wanted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because like off the top of my head, I can think of at least 10 different cars in China that I would like, you know, give a hard look. Versus here, there's like none. Well,
yeah,
one.
What do you buy?
One, but it was discontinued. And also it was technically Chinese. It was a Volvo EX30.
Oh, right. That thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is also like technically the worst car on that platform, because it's a Geely platform developed, but I've driven all of them on that platform, which is crazy. I'm like the only one who's like not a Geely employee who has driven them all, and I think it's kind of the worst one, but worst being a relative term. Like I think I still think it's nice, although a lot of like American reviewers didn't like it. They just don't like software. Part of it. Well, I mean, also the software is a little fucky, but whatever.
Are they still bringing that Lotus that is that electric Lotus SUV that is a Geely underneath?
It's been on sale.
Bringing that.
It's been on sale for actually a little while now, very quietly.
Maybe that's.
I don't go to Lotus's website a lot.
They are not selling very many, I think, globally. But they're trying to make it work. Like they just announced a hybrid version of it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because even in China, although we're like EV dominance is like really high, they still have a lot of blind spots where there's definitely people in China that are not convinced yet.
Which is
why they have like so many like long range EV, extended range EVs, where it's basically like, you know, mostly an electric car. Then they have a little ass gas engine, basically like a BMW i3.
Yeah, or like extender. Like the Ram Hallmark ornament that never came to be.
Yeah,
in episode 3 of this show, Jordan shared that she saw a Hallmark ornament for the Ram EREV that came out and was sold and then discontinued.
Yeah,
that thing is so funny to me. They were sold out of it, which leads me to believe I'm like, did other irony poison like automotive, like I who think... got to these before me? like I wanted that ornament.
Yeah, I think that's also kind of unfortunate that car didn't come out, but also like knowing Stellantis would probably be a hot ass mess.
Yeah.
You know,
what if it sucked and they were just, that's always my thing where it's just like, how many of these, like, Honda's hybrid offerings are so good that I don't think that they canceled the EVs because they weren't coming together well in like dev. Well, there's part of me that's like, what if they just weren't coming together? Like,
I think it wasn't just coming together. two things. I went to Japan to look at Honda stuff back in like 2023. I can't remember. Maybe it was 2024. Mm-hmm. But they flew me out to Japan and they had me driving a prototype, which was like basically a cut up Accord that they fit underneath, you know, the chassis that they had in development. And then they had all this stuff that they were supposed to, all this like, you know, software stuff they were supposed to put into the new cars that were coming. But I could tell it was very much proof of concept rather than actually anything working. Like a lot of it was like, you know, video illustrations. You know, like I told my friend, it's like, this reminded me when I was in design school and, you know, I had to come up with these futuristic ideas. I mean, you don't know how to make that work. You're like 19, like, but that was like the gist for the whole project. And then I had a friend, who told me some stuff about the project there. And they're like, yeah, we just got like, I knew something was up when Honda started bragging about, oh, we just now got the glove box to open from the screen, and I was like a few weeks ago, and I'm like, so they basically were not, that thing was not finished. Also, it was just kind of a dumbass idea. The Zero Series Saloon, the cheese wedge looking sedan. I remember going to Japan and asking, I was like, hey, this car seems like it's full of a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of like, you know, sensors and software. You know, there's a real dearth of affordable EVs. So how much is this thing going to cost? And they wouldn't tell me. And I was like, do you think it's more like Tesla Model 3 or Tesla Model S? I was like, well, we envision it closer to the Tesla Model S.
Oh, no. Honda, you can't be selling that with the H on it. You got to.
Right. And everyone got, like the room got dead silent.
Yeah.
It's also, it reminded me of the time when like Honda was trying to get with Nissan. And
yeah.
Honda was trying to get
that was 5 minutes. Yeah.
Well, it was so funny because I was at another press conference with that, and like Honda was trying to get with Nissan, and somebody asked him, was like, so what do you think Nissan's going to bring to the table in this deal, in this partnership? And one of the Honda top brass was like, you know, that's a really good question. I never thought about that. Which was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. I was like, and I could tell from that answer, like, he really did not.
He was so full of the zeal of finally being the one to defeat Nissan once and for all at Honda that he's just like, no, we just gotta do it. And it's just like, well, what do we get? He's like, oh, fuck, we've gotta own 2020 whatever Nissan. That's the net negative for everyone.
Right. They were like, well, maybe they can do big trucks. And I'm like, there was no zest or joy in that statement. And then literally 3 weeks later, they're like, actually, we're not gonna do this. This is stupid.
fuck it. No, scrap this one. We'll dump it. We'll try again later.
Yeah. Well, I do have good news though about the future of the American auto industry.
I don't believe you.
Oh, I've got great news. Come on. Why would you not believe me when I come into with this cadence and say I have good news? Kevin is going to know who this is, but Bernie Moreno, who is a senator from Ohio, is forwarding legislation in Congress next month, reportedly, to ensure, quote from Bernie Moreno, there's never a scenario where a Chinese automobile will enter our market. That's hardware, that's software, that's partnerships. He then went on in the same statement to call Chinese cars a cancer. That is a direct quote from him. And you know, just for everybody else, because I could see Kevin like getting ready to punch the table. Bernie Moreno owned 15 car dealerships.
There we go.
Ohio.
Uh huh.
But he sold some of them fairly recently to finance his blockchain car titling company called Onum. Currently an active senator. He replaced Rob Portman, the one Ohio senator that I met with my mom. Took me to the Republican Party headquarters to volunteer as a 14-year-old.
Victoria?
Yeah.
I went to a baseball
game with Rob Portman.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Oh, no. No. That was part of my homeschool curriculum, was to go make calls.
For the Republican Party?
Yes,
oh,
when
man.
I was like 14 years old.
Oh my god. Imagine being one of the adults on the other end of a line when you have a squeaky voiced 14-year-old calling you about Republican politics.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I would have been like, where's your mother? Let me speak to her. Let me speak to her, please. No, I think I've read that too, and I'm like, you know, that's futile. Because I'm learning behind the scenes that we're kind of at the if you can't beat them, then join them stage for a lot of like Western automakers. So I feel like it's going to be really soon that either, because I know Ford wants to do some basically Geely stuff in Europe. You know, there's actually some talk that Leap Motor, which is like, you know, partnered with Stellantis, they might start building in Canada, maybe. Yep. And then there's like BYD, of course, you know, that's the big one that maybe they'll build something in Mexico, maybe they'll build something here, maybe they'll do something in Canada. So it's like, you know, you're trying to stop this from happening, but like, it's clear that a lot of it's going to happen. You know, right now at this point, we're probably going to be the only holdouts that doesn't have like Chinese cars in here. But also, I wouldn't be surprised if we end up like, you know, weird captive imports, you know, sort of like Geostorm rebadge Isuzus.
Geostorm.
Right. You know what I mean? Can you imagine like, you know, like a Geostorm-esque, you know, rebadge Chinese car on a fucking U.S. American lot.
Okay, but think about if they did just bring back like the amount of like 80s 90s bullshit nostalgia you get for bringing back the Geo name. Like, they weren't good cars, but thanks to Brad Brownell and the other lovingly saying this dipshits at Radwood, like, we all like the stuff that's bad now. That would be so good. I don't know if good is what I'd go with,
but sure, I'll take the Chinese EVs. Yeah, I don't care what they call them.
Say this now because it didn't end up happening. Obviously, BYD was looking at land in Texas like 4 years ago.
Wouldn't be surprised.
Very speculatively, but yeah, there was a huge plot that was not that far from the awful Tesla Gigafactory in Austin. That BYD was looking at, because the state of Texas was, for some reason, talking with them about it when I know who runs Texas, so that's...
The thing about Texas is that they have oppositional defiant disorder, and Biden was like, no Chinese EVs, and so they were like, bad.
But also at the same time, I feel like a lot of these Republicans, they just want money, you know? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
This is what gets me. I told somebody, it's like, you know, I feel like BYD should just drive a seal to the White House and make Trump sit in it. And then, like, right. And then he'll be like, wow, it's so impressive. And then 2 weeks later, we have, like, a BYD store on every corner.
Yeah. Well, remember he went to Japan and he came back and he was like, we got to have K cars.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And I'm like, I'm really surprised the Chinese government hasn't done that yet. to be honest,
Mom Donnie in there with like another fake newspaper with headlines of just like, right. Mom Donnie's like, actually, sir, there's a little company that I think you'd like a lot called BYD.
You know, they build. It's short for Build Your Dreams, and they can build your dream if you'd like, right?
And it's like, sir,
build you a car that will get you to heaven,
right?
Just a car that'll get you to heaven. You know who else built dreams? You, sir, with your real estate ventures, and then it's just like, I should BYD. You're right.
Great. Right, which is, like, kind of pathetic, but also, like, you know, a very low-tech way of getting it in here. But I feel like it would work. But, yeah, I'm curious to see what happens with Canada, you know, because, you know, they're deciding to let in Chinese cars basically by, like, cutting down the 100% tariff to 6%, but also, like...
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. But it's also, like, based on, I think there's, like, a limit that you can import. I think it's up to like, I think 30,000 cars a year. Then I think it goes back up. But still, that's like a really big start.
I mean, yeah, that was, the thing is like, that was similar to like what happened in the 80s with Japanese car companies, which is how Honda moved over here with the Columbus plant. And then also it's still like, the limit still wasn't enough to keep Japanese cars from dog walking American cars for all of the 80s and most of the 90s. So,
right.
Yeah, I do just think that we are repeating that resistance to Japanese or even like Korean cars.
But it feels worse now, maybe because of social media and how polarized everything is.
Yeah.
Because I feel like even with like Japanese and Korean cars with this kind of animosity, I feel like it was never like this.
Well, because they were still cars as we all conceived of them. Mm-hmm. They weren't this, like, sure, there was definitely, like, the culture wars have always been mm-hmm. going. That is the Reagan administration. It's the Nixon. It's everything. But I think with the fact that the thing that these Chinese automakers want to bring in are cheap EVs that are good, it is both, not only are they Chinese, they also have the sin of being non-traditional cars. Like, I'm like, yeah. I don't know. I think if the Chinese were, like, trying to come in 10 years ago with, like, a Hellcat Challenger competitor, I bet there'd be a bunch of people's like, they got V8s over there, too. Maybe we got more in common than I thought. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I just, like, there's a weird story going around that BYD is either trying to join F1 or buy into a team, either at like sponsorship or something. And I'm like, is that them just get, like, how many more eyes do we need to just throw ourselves in front of so we start normalizing ourselves internationally?
I think that's partially. I also think that's kind of a Chinese cultural export thing, because I know Geely has been trying to do some racing car stuff.
They owned Lotus. It's the easiest slam dunk in the world. Just do true. Lotus.
True, true, like, true. But I think they're like, I think they would rather have them as Geely.
They would
be
rather be Geely. Yeah.
There's a lot of talent in China. Like when I drove the the Neo Firefly. Like the guy who was with me to make sure I was like, you know, not gonna kill myself in Shanghai. He was like, he used to work for Renault Sport. Like, he was a driver.
Nice.
He was a driver for Renault Sport. And he was like, oh, I just really love this car and, like, how it feels. And I was like, huh. So they worked on this? You know? I just think of stuff like that. It's just, like, there's a whole lot of new ideas and new, you know, ways of thinking. And they're really being given a realm to, like, you know, really run free to a certain extent to really make these really cool things. Although I will say things are getting a little less cool in China. You know,
I
don't know if you kind of noticed lately, like, everything's kind of turned into the same crossover blob. It's a little samey lately.
It's like the carcinization theory for, like, animal life. It's just everything after a while converges on the form of a crossover.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's just because of, like, what, if they are trying to export these things worldwide, especially to, like, Europe, Canada, Australia, like, If all we as the Western car market has been making is these different crossover blobs, there's part of me that goes like, oh, is this what you think you have to sell to people? Or is this what you just like want to safely bank on? Like, if we're doing this, like, I know expanding overseas for a car company is expensive no matter what, but like,
I think part of it, I think part of it is that I also starting to realize that like China doesn't reward creativity in some of those places as much as you think you do, as much as you think they would. Like, I don't know if you ever remember Hi-Fi.
No.
Yeah.
They used to make those really big.
I want to know this one, though.
They used to make, like, really, really cool supercar, or, like, supercar almost level, you know, weird-shaped things that kind of look like Gundams. That's what Patrick George told me. They kind of look like a Gundam.
They sure did.
But they were, like, super cool and, like, really efficient, and the company ran out of money. And basically, like, the whole operation face planted. Partially because the cars, even though they were expensive, they were just too weird. I even think of Zeekr, like the Zeekr X, which is like basically a cousin to the Volvo EX30. Kind of a weird looking car. It's like a small crossover. It's got a lot of shit in it. Like the screen moves, the other stuff, like the it's just like full of stuff in it, and it's an absolute sales flop. Same with the Zeekr Mix, which I've actually written about that. It's the one that has the all four doors open, and you can walk through it. It looks like the one where the seats turn around and
the conversation pit car.
Absolute flop.
Oh, I bet.
Unfortunately, even in China, people like, even when I was driving in China, people were like asking me questions like, oh, what is this? And it was like curiosity, but like, I would never buy that, but that is cool. You know?
Okay. Have we ever actually been in one of my friends in high school, he had a minivan that the middle row could turn to face the back row. Yeah. It's not pleasant at speed. It's not good.
My Toyota Hiace did that, and I permanently left those seats in that configuration. Everybody was riding in the conversation.
Yes, but you were driving it. You were facing the correct way.
I rode in the back occasionally.
To be fair, you can't drive the Zeker Mix with the seats turned around.
Because it was
made for a very specific Chinese audience. Because like,
sure, yeah.
Basically, I was told like during COVID, people couldn't go anywhere inside. That's part of the reason why I guess SUVs started taking off is because people were, well, now we can't go anywhere. Let's go camping. Cars became like a weird third space for people. So Zeker was kind of like, you know, trying to cater to that. It's like, what if we made a car that's a third space entirely?
You know? So it's kind of like a parallel phenomenon to like overlanding in the States.
Yes.
Sort of like that blowing up during COVID was very much like we got to get out. We got to go do something. That kind of makes sense, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is
off-roading of cars?
Like, that's what I think about. Like, you know, I think about like how, you know, these Chinese manufacturers are really trying to meet a need for the market. They're like really thinking about how Chinese people use these cars and what they like about them. And they're trying to meet those needs. And I just feel like people in the West have stopped asking those questions.
Yeah. I mean, I do really want to know though. Like, do you know what off-roading in China is?
I don't know. I know it's becoming kind of a thing though.
Okay. Hell yeah.
Like, I know there's like a whole, like, I think Chery, they have Jetour. And a few other things that can go off road. iCar is also really good brand by Chery. The iCar V23 is one of my favorite things, like to look at. It's inspired of the Chinese military Jeep.
Oh, cool!
Holy hell, this is cool.
Yeah.
Is it Vicky as hell? I bet
it's so cute. I was like, damn, if they were to bring this here, they would print money. Like, I don't even like off-roaders like that. Like, I hate off-roading, but like, I would buy that.
This is
so cool. It's like a cross between a Jeep Wrangler, a Land Rover Defender, and like a Suzuki Jimny. But cuter than all of them at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. But
this is awesome.
But they're also
dirt cheap. Oh my god.
Yeah, I will say, just kind of rule of thumb, you just should probably like double any price. But still, like, I think it's like roughly like 16 grand. But like still, like what, $32,000? That's still a pretty good deal.
Oh man.
You know.
All right, well, I'll put a picture of this in the show notes. But yeah, if you want to rotate this in your mind, just imagine something Vicky as hell.
Yeah. I love it. It's yeah.
We get shit like the Ineos Grenadier, like a car
made by literally an oil company.
Yeah.
Made by an oil company and a maniac, and it's all sorts of that's what we get. That's our fun new car companies, is old regurgitated slop.
Mm-hmm.
We could do an entire special episode on the Grenadier. But on the topic
the
of
the Ineos
car...
guy will have me killed for the things I want to say about the terrible Ineos man.
On the topic of car money, if you're cool with me, bring up one last thing, Kevin.
Sure.
One of the other things that you talk about a decent amount in your reporting that I really respect, because it's something that I think the industry generally does not like to discuss, is that money is real, yes, and it can hurt you. Auto journalists kind of like you get a, when you work as an auto journalist, you just get like an endless like parade of free car after free car, and they come, you publish what they cost, you talk about like where it slots into its market, but like you are not paying anything for any of these. And I think people kind of forget that money is real, and it is increasingly becoming impossible to buy a car. And you mentioned this quite a bit. You know, you've actually talked about this a lot. One of the things that you did at Car Bibles that I loved was you actually like bought, oh, and you think you still do this, I just don't think you write about it, but you bought old cars and you would flip them after you would do repairs yourself. Like, you were very much like a shade tree mechanic, better than I am, but like in the same vein, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that you understand really well, like, you know, the need to have like an affordable vehicle, and like a very personal sort of felt sense. And so we got some new data this week from Edmunds, which the average new car monthly payment is $773. And I feel like we should just sit with that number for a minute.
You know, I'm unsurprised.
Yeah, but no. Like, holy shit.
Yeah. I think about this, you know, all of my friends, I make the least out of them. And I feel like, you know, for even for Ohio, I feel like we're kind of, I don't want to say well-to-do, but we're definitely above, you know, the median income here in Columbus, mm-hmm. Ohio. You know, I have friends who make six figures and none of them can afford new cars.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, we've talked about this a bunch because it's like, mm-hmm. I know, I mean, I definitely am on the lower end of income for people I know. And mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who work in, like, the tech industry. And I would think that they would be out there buying new stuff. And
they're not.
Almost, like, I know a couple of people who have bought, like, brand new supercars because they had like IPOs years ago and they don't worry about money. It's not a real number. And so that's just like, that's an entirely different market. And then I think I know like two people who have bought like new cars and everybody else is like either lightly used or leases or mm-hmm. like they're still deal hunting. And it's like, you know, that I guess if it's $773 a month for a car, that makes sense to me.
Yeah,
my first apartment cost.
legitimately, like I remember paying $770 a month or $715 a month actually in Columbus, Ohio for my first place. You know, I think that also that study said that there's, I think 20% of all car buyers are paying more than $1,000 a month. That's a mortgage.
It's a mortgage.
Yeah. And it gets to me because, like, you know, these new cars are so shitty. You know, they're not lasting a life of a loan.
No,
you know,
that's the other thing. Yeah,
like I've seen like new Escalades and shit just like throw rods for no reason.
Yes,
like have a whole ass hole in the fucking motor. I'm like, what are you supposed to do with that?
We've taken a step back on reliability. Well, I feel like have not even just outpaced like the cost of living, but like just sprinted past it because with the culture we live in and where most people live in the U.S., like, it does feel like the attitude is like, what are you going to do, not buy it? Like, fucking, like, yeah, you're going to pay $1,000 a month, motherfucker, because you want a car that works. And even then, good luck.
Yeah.
They're legally able to sell you a Dodge product that is a badge engineered Alfa Romeo. Like, I don't... All shit.
Just further data that Edmunds compiled is that the average loan, so not the sale price, the average loan amount currently for a new car is $43,889. That's what you're financing. The average down payment is also just $6,206. So the average car does, if you're doing the math in your head, yeah, the average car is like $50,000. Cause you know, and that's what's kind of insane if you're like an auto journalist, right? And this always drove me batshit insane when I was actually working in the field is I would get like, I remember the one that killed me was I had an Explorer and it was like a Explorer Limited. The one that looks like a cop, well, they all look like cop cars, but it seemed like it looked even more like a cop car. And it was like $52,000. And I was like, this is a Ford Explorer. And it's like, this is what my parents' first house cost.
Yeah.
What the hell? And it's like, oh, that's an average car now. Whoops. I guess it makes sense then.
Yep. That sounds like when I had the Dodge. We're picking on this damn car. I had the Dodge Hornet RT.
It sucks.
I had a Dodge Hornet RT. And at first, like for the first 5 minutes, I was like, oh, this probably is not that bad. Like I didn't mind driving it for like the first hour I had it. I mean, this is like a good $30,000 car. And I pulled out the window sticker and it says 52. And I was like, what the fuck?
My parents bought, which they called it their last new car, which I said good luck because as much as it is still a Honda, it is a Honda Civic Hybrid. But
oh yeah,
Sieg would even like a like bare bones Civic starts at right now.
Yeah,
like the Civic starts north of 30 now. With
destination being and tax, yeah, it'll take you there.
Yeah. Like the things you can't negotiate your way out of. Like someone was like, why are you so in the tank whenever any of your friends are like trying to buy something new that you go Mazda? I'm like, because it's the only car company that has numbers that I still feel like I can understand paying for it for like a hatchback. You know what I mean? Like. I'm like, Mazda feels like they are tethered to reality still in a way that a lot of these other, like, yeah, what was the last reasonable thing that I tested?
Can I make it worse while you're thinking?
Yeah. No, please cool. do.
Okay. Because every single line of this gets worse. 84-month or longer loans are now 22.9%. Of new car loan terms.
But that's the only way I can afford
it. Months,
that's the only way I can afford it.
84 months is enough 12s that I had to think about how many years that was.
Yeah, that's 7 years. I just did the quick math.
That's the only way people can afford it, though, which is so fucked.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, you know, you might say, well, they must be getting them at good rates, to which I would say the average new car APR is 6.9%, which isn't historically terrible. Like, if you look at, like, car loan APRs over the years, you know, in the 80s, remember, people were paying, like, 13 or 14%, but they were also paying with that for, like, 3 years. 7 years at 7% is insane. If you buy a used car, average APR is 10.8% with an average length of 70 months and $559 a month payments.
For a used car. No.
When did we normalize financing used cars?
Well, because COVID.
Yeah. I was just like, CarMax, sure, CarMax would have given you a loan. I was always under the impression that what my parents taught me is like, well, if you just want to pay for a thing in cash, you should buy used. And then it'll be like, a nice used car is $10,000. And now it's just like, no. A thing that has been underwater in Houston is $10,000.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Honda Fit thought. And Honda Fits do not depreciate. A 2020 Honda Fit is the same cost now as it was in 2020 with 15,000 miles a year put on the odometer. And it will stay like that for the rest of America's existence.
Yep.
I really want... The way that people talk in Bring a Trailer comments about, like, well, if you bought this Ferrari at this point, but it's just me doing that math with Honda. Like, you could drive that Ferrari for free. It's like, well, I drove a Honda Fit for free for a year, Imperial. Like, what can you say?
And then, of course, the part of this that is, like, directly relevant to Kevin's line of work, which is that EVs average $55,300 new, which is historically cheap for them, and for the delta between, like, a gas car and an equivalent EV car. And yet, despite this, there are 130 days of supply sitting on dealer lots right now. And if you're not familiar with, like, days of supply as an industry term, it's just, like, if they stopped making EVs right now and you had to just sell through your inventory at current rates, how long would it take for dealer lots to run dry, basically? 130 days is a lot.
So it's, what was the pre-COVID supply chain? It was usually you had, like...
You mean, like...
30
before?
Days?
Like, yeah.
It was like 30 days. That's good.
Yeah, it was crazy. That's why people went so all in on EVs, because it's kind of the only thing that people could get.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, duped a lot of manufacturers into being like, oh, people want these like this.
Also, we still have the tax credit.
That too.
Yeah. I assume that number from Edmonds is not taking the dead tax credit into
the tax credit's gone.
Yeah, the tax credit's gone. EV sales have like halved since then.
Well, yeah. And this was my point like a couple episodes ago when we were talking about this. It's like, I think also a lot of manufacturers got really used to in the States leaning on that tax credit to to make their MSRP math actually palatable.
Yeah.
Because, like, none of these people, like, I feel like a lot of people went way expensive for their first round of EVs because they're like, well, the tax credit means that, like, no one's really paying that number. And now it's just like, when people are like, you want me to pay how much fucking money for the Fiat 500 electric? Like, get out of my house. Like,
yeah. I almost feel bad for the Fiat 500e, though. Almost.
I do too.
It's like,
it should be great.
It's like, I don't think it's a bad car. I think it's an old car. You know? Like, it clearly was, like, introduced in Europe in, like, 2019.
Yeah.
And it feels it. You know?
Do you know which one I feel kind of bad for?
Mm.
And I know that this is, like, I probably don't need to, but I kind of feel bad about the ID Buzz.
I don't.
Because every time I see one, I really think that they're fun and cheery. That's fair. They're probably atrocious. I haven't driven one.
They're okay to drive, but I think I told somebody, I was like, you know, it's definitely a European commercial van with, like, retro styling. That's like,
it's a panel van with a happy face.
It really is, though, because, like, it misses a lot of things that, like, regular minivans can do. Like, it's kind of not that nice. The seats don't fold flat because, like, where you're gonna put them, there's a big ass battery under the floor.
Shit, yeah.
There's also no cup holders for the second row.
What?
Yep. How did they do that? You know?
How are people, like, not saying that we need to live out of our cars, but this is America. That's what we do here.
Right.
Like,
basically,
you're gonna deprive your children of their water.
Like, I guess what happened is that they were supposed to have the airline style trays that they have in Europe because, you know, VW likes doing that shit. And then they pulled them at the 11th hour because I guess they wouldn't pass dot spec.
They won't. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do know that they won't. Oh.
So the whole van has like four cup holders, and you have to like get some clip-on ones from the dealer. It's so fucking stupid. It's just like, who thought of this?
If we're just naming EVs that we wish had worked in the US, I really wanted the electric Mini to do well, because wasn't that such a good, like, if they were going to stop making the cute i3, like, just make a good electric Mini.
You know, I
make a good city car. Make good city cars.
I've heard the new body Mini and the Aceman that they sell overseas is actually really solid, but also, like, that's technically Chinese. It's made in part by Great Wall Motors.
The cycle of BMW and Mini getting very mad at those Chinese companies for basically selling knockoff Minis to now the Mini itself is a Chinese
even the Renault Twingo, the new Renault Twingo resurrection, I think that's also Chinese. It's made in part with Geely.
I love, this is a Renault Twingo podcast. I want the new Renault 5 to do well. It seems like it's selling well.
It is. I think they've already sold like 100,000 of them. So that's like, you know, good for them. I say out of all Western brands, I think Renault is like the one Western brand I think is really doing it right when it comes to EVs. From what I can see, they're like really, they're really leaning into their strengths here. You know, like, I've heard the software still sucks in those cars, but, like, I've heard they're really nice to drive and they're fun to look at. You know?
They are really cute. I mean, also, just, like, I am a huge French car apologist, so I will 100% support you saying the French cars are good.
Did you see any of those while you were over there? Yeah.
I did not get a chance to get a picture of it because it was pouring rain because I was walking to the Eiffel Tower and the sky opened unexpectedly. I stopped at a cafe to, you know, have, actually, okay. So last episode, I just got back from my European trip. I had never really traveled overseas before. I went to Glasgow like last year, but it was just briefly. And then this year, like, I actually did like a little, like, you know, baby's first Europe trip kind of thing. And I kind of got culture shock coming back because, like, transit works better over there. There's a lot of aspects of, like, the streets are a lot more walkable. The cities feel a lot more vibrant. There's not as much, like, people, you can just, like, kind of go hang out. There's not, like, the same kind of, like, anti-loitering sort of shit that we have in the U.S. There's, like, things stay open later. There's just, like, it felt, there was a lot of stuff that I just deeply enjoyed as, like, something just, like, living in a, you know, being in one of the cities there in kind of, like, the middle of everything felt, like, much more lively than a lot of American cities I've been in. And then I flew back and I got into Philadelphia and they had ice everywhere. And TSA didn't work and I missed my flight because our society is crumbling. Oh. And I was like, damn it. What I'm curious about is, do you get a similar, like, obviously, you know, last episode I had a full disclaimer about, like, I'm aware Europe is not a magical wonderland. There's a lot of shit wrong there. And I think that for the most part, I'm pretty aware of stuff like that in China, but do you get the same kind of, like, gut instinct when you come back from like a trip to China where you're like, damn, I miss being able to get on a bullet train and be in another like city in 3 hours?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Like for me, it was like the cost of food. You know, I get back home. Yes. You know, I'm not used to like paying. It was so nice paying like, you know, $2 for a big ass bowl of noodles.
Oh, yeah.
Or even once again, like, you know, going back to the EV stuff, you know, electric vehicle life in so much of China is like so ubiquitous. You know, there are charging stations everywhere. Most of the cars on the roads, or not most, I'd say like a solid half, especially in like the big cities, are green plated, you know, new energy vehicles, which means they're PHEV or EV. And it just seems like, you know, people are making this thing work and nobody's really complaining.
Yeah.
You know, versus here, every time I talk about an EV, everyone's like, oh, what happens if we run out of charge? Like, the cars are not rechargeable, you know?
What happens if you run out of gas? Like, I always just, I'm like...
I don't know, plug it in. Damn.
Like, you gotta go through the entire battery pack and pop in new double A's.
Right, right. But I just think about stuff like that and, like, you know, how... We could make things like that happen here, but we don't. And that's the frustrating part.
Yeah, that was very much my feeling kind of when I came back from Europe. It's like, you know, obviously, like, politically, things are still a mess. But at least from, like, an infrastructure and sort of, like, built environment level, there are things that work perfectly fine that I've been told for my whole life are impossible, like denser housing or, like, subway lines that are, like, bored a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, heavy rail in a city. Like, there's all these things that are just, like, very low-hanging fruit from, like, a political perspective that we could embrace if we just had not told ourselves it was impossible. And I figured it's got to be similar there with that kind of stuff. Obviously, like, everything else is, you know, I know socially, I know enough, like, trans girls in China to know that it's not, like, you know.
Yeah.
That's my constant prayer on this show is, Chairman G, please get cool about trans women real fast.
Right. Yeah. That's
I can't move there because once again I got suggested a raft of videos from that Australian guy who I think lives in Hong Kong now, who just reviews Chinese cigarettes, and I don't think he's ever once said a cigarette was bad, but the amount of flavors they have, I just go,
it's funny. That's actually one of my biggest gifts when I go, because I don't smoke, but when I come, every time I go to Asia, I always like bring my smoker friends like a carton.
It's
so cheap there. Like, you can get a whole carton at duty free for like $18. Yeah.
See, like, if you, like, just get cool about trans girls and I will be on the first flight. We have a bunch of modesty tech. It's no big deal.
I'll ride at a Comac. They seem fine. They seem like they're planes. I don't know. Like,
right.
That was the food being like good and cheap was, I haven't been to China, but, for whatever reason, before I went to Japan in 2019, a bunch of people were like, well, make sure you have, like, enough budgeted for food and not just everything else. And then I undershot my food budget by, like, 50%. I was just like, where were you all eating? Like, I don't know. I was just kind of eating really excellent food and paying, like, $3.
People go to Asia and they want to eat Western food, which is so weird to me.
No,
like, yeah, so it's actually funny because sometimes the car brands that'll fly me out is like, would you like Western food? And I'm like, I didn't fly all that way for that, so no.
It's like, I came from the Western food place, like,
right, like, why would I do that? I'm gonna be home in a few days, like, please skin me like actual Chinese food. And it's always great.
I did try barbecue, like American style barbecue, in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But that was because at a bar the previous night, when I told them that I was visiting from Texas, a bunch of people all were just like, a bunch of drunk salarymen were just being like, the love that Germans and the Japanese have for Texas always blew me away when I was traveling for like press trips or whatever.
Yeah.
with a bunch of these salarymen. We're like, we have, it is real Texas barbecue. And I'm like, I will trust you because one, I have gotten very drunk with you men. So I will do whatever at this point that you suggest, because like, do you want to go to karaoke? You want to do it right now? But yeah, other than that, I was just like, a bunch of my friends, when they go overseas, they're like, I want to try the American fast food there. And I'm like, that is maybe for the airport. Maybe.
You know, you know what's crazy? I do have one exception, though. When I go to China, I always get KFC. Because China's KFC, okay. China KFC is elite. And it's so funny. Yeah, I was talking to, I think, somebody who worked at Geely. He's like, yeah, I went to the U.S. to try KFC there, and it was horrible. Like, and I'm like, yeah, that's kind of like an allegory for the U.S. car industry.
I said last episode, I was just like, we split the world into two after the Second World War, and it was America but better, or America but slightly shittier.
It really is. I remember I was going on a high speed train to look at a car factory for Neo, and we stopped somewhere in kind of like rural-ish China. And I was like, damn, this feels like West Virginia. And I'm like, these guys are eating KFC and driving Buick minivans and with Starbucks. I'm like, this is Ohio. I'm home.
Was this the trip where you posted a bunch of pictures of the U-bodies?
Yeah, because I wrote in a couple Buick vans, because they're super popular there still.
But, which is so funny to me, because that was like the car I got my driver's permit in.
Yeah,
it was a Chevrolet. It wasn't a Buick, but it was the U-body minivan.
Yeah, I think that's also the trip. Maybe it was a different trip where they had the drift U-body that some guy had made.
Yes, yes,
yo.
Yeah, they had a long wheelbase U-body that they put a two JZ in. Yeah,
inventing new levels of dude rocking.
Literally,
the American State Department will never convince me that these people are my enemy.
Literally, because like, it also kind of put me at ease. Because I'm like, oh my god, what's this country like? And I'm like, is that a 2JZ and a fucking trans sport?
we are one people, and we did it.
Dudes rock with Chinese characteristics.
Exactly.
We are one people in this world who all love throwing a 2J in something a 2JC should not be in.
I want to ask you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we didn't discuss that you would like to talk about?
I don't know. I think watch this space. I got some big things coming. I'll hopefully be in China again.
Hell yeah!
I'm gonna be there probably for anywhere from a week. I'll be there for the Beijing Auto Show, I think.
Hell yeah!
And then I'm gonna drive some cool cars. So
sweet. Have you been to the Beijing Auto Show before?
Yeah, that was actually the first piece that we referenced. That was when I went to Beijing.
Right. Yeah, the Beijing Auto Show is kind of one of the big auto shows that like has survived and like thrived over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like it is taking more of an international presence in that way?
Yes. I think both Beijing and Shanghai, just because like, you know, the sheer market, China's car market is almost as big as the United States now. Maybe it's surpassed it. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but, because of just that sheer momentum, China is going to be a tastemaker and trendsetter. So, you know, what happens in China will eventually happen around the world, you know?
Yeah.
In some form or fashion.
We get the little cowboy hat Vodcon guys in our cars.
I do too. I wish we had more stuff like that. I wish Neo came to the United States. I know they still have a San Francisco office. They're the guys who do the battery swapping, which I think is actually really clever.
The battery swapping, but real.
Yeah. I think they've done like, I think 100, I think they just crossed 100 million swaps that they've done.
Wow.
Globally.
I thought you were about to say 100,000. I was like, million. That's really good.
Yeah. They use it as an alternative to charging, especially in China. And also if you opt into the battery swap program, you basically get a huge discount on the car.
Oh.
Like almost 10 grand. Or sometimes more than 10 grand.
Is it because you don't technically own the
Correct.
Battery?
Correct.
Okay. I mean,
I'm okay with, you know, I'm okay with that. Cause like, you know, I asked, I was like, well, how do you guys, they basically said they assure that every battery is going to be in good health, whatever that means. And you'll always get one that's like charged up to 93%. And then like, as the batteries age or wear out, if there's a mechanical problem with them, they take them out of circulation.
Well, and like, that's such a good fit for like mm-hmm. what we've been doing in the States with like recycling batteries, where mm-hmm. basically like at the end of the life, you use them as storage because you mm-hmm. they don't like heat cycle great. And they're not like maybe at their top performance, but they still store power decently well.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you don't have to worry about like, oh, we have this whole car around it we have to throw away.
Yep.
You just have to worry about like, that's such a great way to like reduce waste mm-hmm. from like, which is like, you know, a potential downside of EVs is like the battery also, fully integrated into the frame.
And also I think the batteries themselves are also like slow charged. They were a little funny about it because it's like, it's always proprietary. It's a proprietary system because it's basically like a logistics, you know, problem, right?
Yeah.
But yeah. Like they basically say, oh yeah, we can tailor the needs of charging for the batteries when they're out of the car based on local demand. So I get the gist that like these batteries aren't fast charged when they come out, which is nice. And then also like you can upgrade sizes, like for example, if you bought the smaller battery, like I only need one for the city, but if you wanted to go on a longer trip, they have like a lease only, you know, big battery that you can rent for longer trips, which is nifty.
That's extremely cool.
Yeah,
that also like solves a lot of like people's range anxiety, I feel like, really rapidly, because you not only can you get a bigger battery, but also you can have it swapped in probably like what, 10 minutes?
Five, actually three. I timed it. It was three.
Okay, well, I'm gonna return. I'm just going to title this episode "Squidward watching SpongeBob and Patrick out the bedroom window."
Yeah, I mean when they had me do the battery swap, because I've done it a couple times, I was like, wow, that was so. I just felt stupid, you know? we're so far behind. I was like, because, you know, because I really thought, like, oh, they're lying, or, like, it's not that big of a deal, or it's going to be, like, you know, this, like, kayfabe, or, like, you know, fake show that they're going to show us. And, like, no, they actually do that.
Yeah, it's, and, like, what, Tesla showed off the Jiffy Lube that was a fake battery swap, like, 10 years ago, and then nothing ever happened. Like, we're just, it's all... Being an American who knows anything about what happens in other countries does feel like we're being punked constantly. It's just like, are we Truman Showed for the rest of the world, but we have a gun for some reason? Like we've got a big gun pointed at everyone else, but yet we're getting shadowed on the wall. Like we're getting Plato caved the entire time, saying like, no, those things aren't real. No. Ugh.
Well. I will say, I look forward, I don't use Instagram, but I do look forward to Kevin sending me videos from China, because he just texts them to me, and I always love seeing those. So I'm sure you post a lot of those on your Instagram, so I'll post that, so you can keep up with him when he's in Beijing. And you still on TikTok? Are you still doing that? Or
every now and again, I'm still there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still there. I'm Gay Tony USA everywhere.
Yeah, which is an all-time username.
Sometimes I wish I had picked a more professional one, but you know what? I can't. It's whatever. We're here.
You gotta own. It's gonna get you so far. Like, I'm gonna be honest. I think 60% of the goodwill of our show is just having a good name. Like, it's like the right people will find you with the right name. Like,
also, I do think that like you having Gaytona USA, us being Trangirlismo, if we ever get to do like. You know, the queer Top Gear we've all always wanted. You should be third host for it. We can go drive cars around in China.
I'd love that. I'd love that a lot.
Undo the damage that Clarkson and Faye did years ago for the Chinese market.
Supposedly, I guess they went back for Grand Tour, but I don't know and I don't care.
I never. Yeah. they seemed like, I think they ate crow. They got so good so fast. But nobody was
watching at that point, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
No.
I can't watch car media anymore. Everyone gets on my nerves.
I get it.
The only person who doesn't at this point is Catchpool. And he is the only guy I can like stand to watch $1 million things because he's tall, British, lanky, and handsome, and I unfortunately have one type of man I'm into because I have brain problems and watched Doctor Who at an impressionable age when David Tennant was the Doctor. So, like this forever.
Yeah, but you can also, you know, Kevin is obviously, you know, always writing for Inside EVs, and I highly recommend his stories because they are, again, genuinely, he is, I think at this point, just my favorite working auto journalist. And I say journalist with, like, you know, the big J on it, because I worked as an auto journalist and, like, occasionally I would do a story that was, like, kind of real, but a lot of it was, like, I was a writer. I did, like, a lot of personal narratives or whatever. And those are obviously, you know, that was my strong suit or whatever, but Kevin actually does, like, real reporting. He does do good personal narratives too, but, like, when I think of his stuff, he does, like, actual reporting, where he goes places, critically reviews things, knows an absolute fuck ton. So I really recommend his coverage. So please go read him on Inside EVs. And then also, you know, and watch him in the future on the Trangirlismo Top Gear China special.
Kevin, is there anything that you want to plug that we have missed plugging here?
Nah, I don't think so right now.
Cool. Well, then I think this is an episode.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. Victoria, we have a thing to plug, actually.
Oh, shit. Yeah, well, I was going to put it in the advertisement.
Oh, the shirts? I was going to talk about the shirts now, but yeah.
That's fair. We probably should mention the shirts. You can get a Trangirlismo t-shirt. They're pre-order until March 20th, or April
20th.
God, I can't figure out dates today. Until April 20th, because haha, funny number. We also have bumper stickers that are car rated, so you can slap that shit on the back of the worst vehicle you own for the bit. I also did relaunch my prints, so I've got my 11x17 series of art, fine art prints from the early 2020s of my van that you can now purchase numbered and signed prints of those if you feel like it. But mostly it's for the Trangirlismo stuff.
Kevin, it was so awesome having you on. It was, I feel like we can talk a lot about the Chinese car market, but we've never driven any of these products because of the aluminum curtain that has been drawn over the United States. So I would just like to thank you for coming on and talking to us, because I know it is a thing that is, you have been on the forefront of for a while, because this is a thing that is, like, this is the smartphone moment with cars, I think. Yeah. And it's kind of like anyone who's not treating it as such, I think, is, like, just kind of lying to their audience. Like, I don't know. Like, these cars all rock. They're not smoke and mirrors. They all rock. We'll see about their long-term reliability or whatever, but, like, other than that, like...
Yeah, I would agree. I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah!
Yeah,